Josh Rothman has written for The New Yorker about just about anything, about philosophy, about fashion, about science, and he recently did a terrific piece about how all the advances in technology have failed to eliminate, wait for it, paper jams from our printers. But among all these interests, one really stands out. Josh says he's never met another man who will admit to reading romance novels. Last year, Josh talked with Curtis Sittenfeld, who's published 5 novels. Now, they're books that involve romance, but they're not exactly romance novels. The most recent is called Eligible, a modern retelling of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. Curtis Sittenfeld asked Josh Rothman the first question.
Can I ask you what your definition of, like, a romantic novel is?
Well, certainly there's lots of classic novels that are essentially romance-based.
Right,
but I also read, like, a reasonable quantity of, like, Nora Roberts. And
that's what I was curious. So essentially, would you say bodice rippers? Like, is that a fair, or is that a derogatory term?
I don't know if that's a I've never read 50 Shades of Grey. And I don't think of Nora Roberts as a bodice ripper type writer. I think it's still pretty romantic in the sense that, you know, it's mostly about unresolved sexual tension, so to speak, between the protagonists. And it's not quite about sex, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I started reading these books when I was, I don't know, probably 10.
Me too.
Yeah, like a pre-adolescent or early adolescent kind of experience. And I think I've read actually, you know, probably a zillion romantic novels over the course of my life. I mean, how did this start for you? Like, what was your introduction?
My gateway was Danielle Steele in fourth grade. I read Harlequin romances around sixth grade. And then I read the ones where it's sort of like, you know, the woman has like a blouse that's falling off her shoulders and her cleavage is showing, and the man, which I think Fabio was the model for a lot of these in the 80s or 90s. And they're sort of like intertwined, like whatever you want to give the name to those. Mm-hmm. I amassed a pretty large, I don't know if I'd say a zillion. And I actually do not read those anymore. But I read them for a long time and they were a big part of my life.
And then was there a point where you started writing stories that were about love?
Yeah, I think that I sort of became a person who, I would almost say I wrote more about like awkward hookups more than romance or like unrequited love and yearning. But so it's almost like the flip side of romance, but it's, you know, it's kind of in reaction to romance or like in the neighborhood of romance.
So in Eligible, so a few years ago, you wrote this book, Eligible, which is a sort of reimagining of Pride and Prejudice that takes place in the modern world. And in Pride and Prejudice, the original, the Austen novel, the moment, I guess you could say, where Lizzie Bennet and Darcy notice each other, what happens is Jane, Lizzie's sister, is sick, and Lizzie has no way to get from her house to the house where Jane is staying. So she runs there, basically. And
yeah.
And when she gets there, she's like breathing hard and maybe a little sweaty and her hair is a little messed up, and she runs into Darcy, and that's when he notices her, I guess. And in Eligible, you came up with the cleverest way to do this in the contemporary context, and I wonder maybe you could just tell that.
Yeah. So Eligible takes place in 2013 in Cincinnati, Ohio, as all the best novels do. And it's summertime. Jane has fainted at lunch and has been taken to the ER. And it's midday in summer in Cincinnati. So it's like 100 degrees. There are no cars at home. And so she thinks, okay, I'm just going to put on my running clothes and run like 5 miles to the hospital. And then my Darcy is a neurosurgeon. And so conveniently, they run into each other outside the entrance to the hospital where she's like sweating everywhere and is totally disheveled.
And as I recall in Eligible, I mean, it's pretty sexy. Like, she's in her running gear. I think she's just in like a sports bra and shorts. And she like runs her hands through her hair and a drop of her sweat flies from her hand and lands on Darcy's white coat. And they both see it happen, but nobody says anything. It's just a little moment of contact. You know, that's like a little.
Well, it's funny. I don't know if that's everyone's definition of sexy. I'm glad to hear it's yours.
So I was at dinner with my wife's family, and I was telling them, oh, you know, I'm going to do this radio interview where I talk about romance novels. And everyone was shocked that this was a thing that I was into. And I discovered, you know, there were no, of course, none of the other men at the table had ever read, so they claimed, a romance novel. But they all read like detective novels or thriller novels. And it occurred to me at that moment that maybe part of the way it works is that it's about familiarity. So unlike you and me, who started reading romance novels when we were small, plenty of guys never did that. And so to them, the pleasure of a new story is relatively small. You actually have to have read a lot of them in order to get a lot of joy out of these stories. You have to be in the habit, and then something about romance comes alive. But anyway, that's my pet theory that I've been mulling over.
Well, I also think that it could have to do with packaging, where I think that, like, and again, these are sweeping generalizations about gender, which are very easy to disprove. But I mean, even like the covers of my books, there's a preppy ribbon belt on one cover. On the cover of Eligible, it's a diamond ring. Mm-hmm. And so I think that telegraphs to men, unfortunately, like, this is probably not for you. Like, I think that plenty of men have the capacity to take the same pleasure in a romantic story or to be moved by it. I don't know, you know, like Braveheart or mm-hmm. The Wire or something. I feel like my readership has been 90% at least female ever since I first started having books published. And I had my first story published in The New Yorker in August 2016. It's about two people who don't really know each other who end up, a shuttle driver and a woman on a business trip, who essentially end up having, like, spoiler alert, like a hookup in a hotel room. And the photo is sort of like the bottom two-thirds of a woman lying in a bed with her legs crossed. So it's like a pretty sexy photo, but it's not feminine. Anyway, I heard from a very disproportionate number of male readers where they were like, I loved your story in The New Yorker, Curtis. And I thought, okay, is it that it was in The New Yorker and The New Yorker is neither male nor female? Is it that the illustration was sexy, but also, you know, not overtly feminine or masculine? Is it that the story itself was kind of sexually graphic that made me have this spike in male readership? But I think above all, I think it was the fact that there's nothing about this that's saying men don't read it. Like, if anything, it's saying, like, men, give us a read. And so it was very – so it's like I think that what we're talking about could really be, like, aesthetic or visual or, you know, have to do with marketing.
That's really – that's fascinating. One sort of, like, criticism one could make of romantic fiction is that it just ends – there's always a happy ending, first of all, and it always ends with the end of the courtship. What do you think about this thing about romance sort of having a circumscribed temporal dimension where it just sort of ends with the wedding? Did you resist that, or do you what's your feeling about that?
I didn't resist it in Eligible.
Right.
I almost feel that a romance is one of the few inherent or natural narratives in human existence. You know, being born and dying has a kind of shape, but it's too elongated or like slack or something. But romance is this thing where, like, it has the structure of a story. You don't have to impose it from the outside.
I guess on some level we're approaching the question of whether romance is real.
Is it a
script that people follow? Because I think maybe one thing that's emerging is, for you and me, romance novels are really fascinating because they're true. I mean, like, they're about the most interesting part of real life. But if you're not a romance reader, then I think your conception of a romance novel is the opposite, that it's, like, completely false.
Well, I feel like, I mean, I think anyone who's ever had a crush on someone else would have to say, yes, they are realist. I mean, you know, not all of the details, but it's like, it's not, I don't know. There is a line that I read relatively recently, and I wish I could remember where I read it. It's something like, would people fall in love if there weren't stories about love or songs about love? You know, like, have we all been sort of primed to want this thing? And there's almost like this feedback loop or something.
Another way of saying this is when I was in college, I was a creative writing major, and my teacher was Edmund White. And at one point I'd handed in a bunch of stories, and they were all pretty romantic, basically. They were about couples and things. And he asked me, we were having like a one-on-one meeting, and he asked me, are your parents divorced? And I said, yeah, why? And he said, well, because I find that often my students with divorced parents write the most romantic stories.
Oh.
So, and that's always interesting to me. Like, why is it so fun to read and think about these things, even if, like, I'm married, I happily so, and have a wonderful romantic marriage and things, but I don't have but my appetite for reading these stories about anguished lovers that can't get together is basically undiminished. And I wonder, like, in your case, why do you think you love these stories so much?
So I guess, I mean, I think the short answer, by the way, saying I have a wonderful romantic marriage is a very unusual sentence to be uttered aloud. I feel like that should be its own podcast, and it should be like 3 hours long. So I think that the romantic story kind of contains everything. Like, I think that essentially so much fiction is about people acting against their own best interest. And there's this sort of pretense that we're all, like, you know, very responsible and almost like trying to be our best selves and wearing Fitbits and like making healthy choices. And like, there's something about, you know, romance that can be so self-destructive, or like you run the risk of like humiliating yourself, or you're so vulnerable. And the fact that it's worth it to people is must mean like it's really great. Like, that you get to feel really deep feeling, you know, physical and emotional feelings. Like it's almost like you can tell how exciting it is or how gripping it is because of how much people risk for it.
Yeah. If radio listeners out there are driving down the road listening to this and they're passing Barnes & Noble and they can pull into the parking lot right now and buy a romance novel, what should they buy?
Well, okay, can I say two?
Yeah.
my heart is torn between two romance novels. No, so in boarding school, I accumulated like essentially a trunk full of bodice rippers. And the only one that I saved was Savage Thunder by, I don't know if you say Joanna or Johanna Lindsay. There's essentially a sex scene that takes place on horseback. okay, so that's one. But then the other thing I would say is read an Alice Munro book, which, I mean, I'm sure plenty of people have. But there's a particular story called Tricks in the collection Runaway. It's like devastating, and I feel like it's taken me almost years to get over it. So it's sort of, I mean, I think it's very romantic and it's very upsetting. Like, it kind of like crushes your heart in the best possible way.
That's totally awesome. Well, thank you so much.
This is so fun. I feel like I almost have like heart palpitations because I'm so excited to be talking about romance.
Curtis Sittenfeld's last novel is Eligible, and she has a collection of stories coming out next month. You think it, I'll say it. She spoke with Joshua Rothman in 2017.